VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program of news and features is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using simple sentences and a limited vocabulary. Today on the program, we have reports from Brian Lynn and Ana Mateo. Later, we hear the program Ask a Teacher, and we'll close the show with an American story. But first,
researchers say COVID-19 survivors may be at greater risk of developing mental health issues than other people. That information comes from a large study published earlier this week. The study found that 20% of those infected with the novel coronavirus are diagnosed with a psychiatric disorder within 90 days. Researchers from Britain's Oxford University studied recovered COVID-19 patients who developed mental health problems. They found that the most common issues were anxiety, depression, and insomnia, the inability to sleep. They also noted a much higher risk of dementia, a condition that weakens the brain. Paul Harrison, a professor of psychiatry at Oxford, is one of the researchers. He told Reuters news agency, "People have been worried that COVID-19 survivors will be at greater risk of mental health problems, and our findings show this to be likely." Harrison urged doctors and scientists around the world to urgently investigate the causes of mental conditions after COVID-19. And he wants them to find new treatments for the disease. "Health services need to be ready to provide care," Harrison warned. "This is especially true," he said, "because the estimates from the study are probably on the low side." The Oxford researchers looked at electronic health records of 69 million people in the United States. This number included more than 62,000 cases of COVID-19. The researchers said the findings are likely to be the same for those infected by COVID-19 worldwide. In the 3 months following a positive test result for COVID-19, 1 in 5 survivors said they experienced a first-time diagnosis of anxiety, depression, or insomnia. The researchers said that COVID-19 survivors were twice as likely to be diagnosed with these conditions than other groups of patients in the same 3-month period. The study also found that people with a pre-existing mental condition were 65% more likely to be diagnosed with COVID-19 than those without. A report on the study appeared in the Lancet Psychiatry Journal. Mental health specialists not directly involved with the study said its findings add to growing evidence that COVID-19 affects the brain. They said that the disease also can increase the risk of many psychiatric disorders. This is likely due to a combination of the psychological stressors associated with this particular pandemic and the physical effects of the illness, noted Michael Bloomfield. He is a psychiatrist with University College London. The fact that people with mental health disorders are at higher risk of getting COVID-19 confirms similar findings in other infectious disease outbreaks, said Simon Wesley. He is a professor of psychiatry at King's College London. COVID-19 affects the central nervous system, Wesley said, and so might directly increase other disorders. But he added that the study confirms there is more going on. The risk, he said, is increased by pre-existing health conditions. Marjorie Wallace is chief of the mental health aid group, SANE. She said the study looks like her organization's experience during the coronavirus health crisis. Wallace said that SANE's telephone helpline is dealing with an increasing number of first-time callers who are having mental health issues. Others are relapsing, she said, because their fear and anxiety have become unbearable. I'm Ana Mateo.
The American company Virgin Hyperloop says the high-speed transportation system it is developing has passed its first test with passengers. The company said the successful test was carried out on November 8th at its 500-meter Dev Loop test area in Las Vegas, Nevada. The Hyperloop system is based on a technology called magnetic levitation. It uses magnetic fields to create a floating effect for a transportation vehicle and push it forward. Some high-speed trains also use this technology. But unlike trains, Hyperloop is designed to operate within pressurized tubes. It uses electric propulsion to move vehicles, called pods, through the tubes at high speeds. The recent test involved two members of Virgin Hyperloop's leadership team. The pod carrying them reached speeds of up to 172 kilometers an hour, the company said. Sarah Lukian, the company's director of passenger experience, was one of the passengers. Lukian told the BBC she felt the trip was exhilarating both psychologically and physically. Sultan Ahmed bin Sulayem is the chairman of Virgin Hyperloop. I had the true pleasure of seeing history made before my very eyes, he said in a statement after watching the test. Bin Sulayem added that he felt he had witnessed the first new mode of mass transportation in over 100 years come to life. Hyperloop says it has already run over 400 tests without passengers at its Nevada site. But the company said the latest test shows that it had successfully developed the technology into a safe transportation system. Jay Walder is the CEO of Virgin Hyperloop. I can't tell you how often I get asked, is Hyperloop safe? He said. With today's passenger testing, we have successfully answered this question. A two-person car was specially developed for the test. Virgin Hyperloop says the actual production vehicle, when completed, will carry up to 28 passengers. Los Angeles-based Hyperloop envisions a future in which its floating pods would carry passengers and cargo at speeds of up to 966 kilometers an hour. The system offers near-silent travel and will release no carbon emissions. The company says the pods could complete a trip between New York and Washington, D.C. in just 30 minutes. That would be twice as fast as a jet flight and four times faster than a high-speed train. The test comes a month after it was reported that Virgin Hyperloop plans to build a $500 million certification and testing center in West Virginia. The company has said it is working to get a safety certification by the year 2025 and aims to launch transportation services by 2030. Virgin Hyperloop has raised more than $400 million, largely from Virgin Group Chief Richard Branson and the port operations company DP World, which is owned by the Dubai government. Virgin is one of several companies working to develop the technology. I'm Brian Lynn.
Today, we answer two similar questions from Eric in China and Shahid in Pakistan. Shahid writes, I am confused by the words construct and produce. What are their different meanings? Thank you. From Shahid in Pakistan. Dear Eric and Shahid, thank you for writing to us. There are many verbs that are like the word make. Produce and construct are two of them. But what are the differences between these two words? Let us take a look at them. Often we use the word produce when we talk about manufacturing something for sale.
The car factory produces hundreds of vehicles each day.
The word produce also describes the result of a natural process.
Every plant produces oxygen, critical to life.
Places like a country or school can produce also.
Last year, Wakanda produced enough food to feed all its people.
We also use the word produce when someone is making a play, movie, or something in the arts.
She is producing a new album to be released in Japan. We often use the verb construct to talk about making something that has many parts. In this sense, it is similar to the word build.
The city constructed a bigger bridge to serve a growing community.
You could use the word built instead of constructed in that sentence and express the exact same idea. Construct does not always mean to build something physically. It can also mean to make a story or theory by using ideas or words. For example,
the short story writer constructed a humorous story about the holidays.
I hope that helps to answer your question, Eric and Shahid. And that's Ask a Teacher. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. You can also leave us a comment on our webpage. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Greg Stockel.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Now it's time for part two of the American story, The Open Boat, by Stephen Crane. Here is Shep O'Neill.
A long stretch of coast lay before the eyes of the men. Slowly the land rose up out of the mountainous sea. The men could see a small house against the sky. To the south, they could see a lighthouse. Tide, wind, and waves were pushing the lifeboat northward. The men thought someone on land would have seen the boat by now. "Well," said the captain, "I suppose we'll have to attempt to reach the shore ourselves. If we stay out here too long, none of us will have the strength left to swim after the boat sinks." So Billy the sailor turned the boat straight for the shore. "If we don't all get ashore," said the captain, "I suppose you fellows know where to send news of my death." The men then exchanged some information. There was a great deal of anger in them. They thought, "If I am going to be drowned, why in the name of the seven mad gods who rule the sea was I permitted to come this far and think about sand and trees?" The waves grew stronger. They seemed always just about to break and roll over the little boat. The coast was still far away. The sailor said, "Boys, the boat won't live 3 minutes more, and we're too far out to swim. Shall I take her to sea again, Captain?" "Yes, go ahead," said the captain. The sailor turned the boat and took her safely out to sea again. "It's funny those life-saving people haven't seen us," one of the men said. "Maybe they think we're out here for sport. Maybe they think we're fishing. Maybe they think we're fools." Once more the sailor rowed the boat, and then the reporter rowed. Suddenly they saw a man walking along the shore. The man stopped walking. He moved his hand in the air to wave at them. He saw them. Now he was running to the house. The captain tied a cloth to a stick and waved it. Now there was another man on the shore. The two men waved their hands in the air as if they were saying hello to the men in the boat. Now, what was that moving on the shore? It was a bus, a hotel bus. A man stood on the steps of the bus and waved his coat over his head. The men in the boat wondered what he wanted to say. Was he attempting to tell them something? Should they wait for help? Should they go north? Should they go south? The men waited and waited. but nothing happened. The sun began to go down. It got dark and cold. They could no longer see anyone on the beach. The sailor rowed, and then the reporter rowed, and then the sailor rowed again. They rowed and rowed through the long night. The land had disappeared, but they could hear the low sound of the waves hitting the shore. This was surely a quiet night. The cook finally spoke. "Billy, what kind of pie do you like best?" "Pie," said the sailor and the reporter angrily. "Don't talk about those things." "Well," said the cook, "I was just thinking about ham sandwiches and..." A night on the sea in an open boat is a long night. The sailor continued to row until his head fell forward and sleep overpowered him. Then he asked the reporter to row for a while. They exchanged places so the sailor could sleep in the bottom of the boat with the cook and the captain. The reporter thought that he was the one man afloat on all the oceans in the world. The wind had a sad voice as it came over the waves. Suddenly there was a long, loud, swishing sound behind the boat and a shining trail of silvery blue. It might have been made by a huge knife. Then there was another swish and another long flash of bluish light, this time alongside the boat. The reporter saw a huge fin speed like a shadow through the water, leaving a long, glowing trail. The thing kept swimming near the boat. He noted its speed and power. The reporter wished the men would wake up. He did not want to be alone with the shark. The reporter thought, as he rowed, he was angry that they had come so close to land and yet might still die at sea. Then he remembered a poem that he had learned as a child. It was a poem about a soldier of the French Foreign Legion. The soldier lay dying in Algiers. Just before he died, he cried out, "I shall never see my own, my native land." And now, many years after he had learned this poem, the reporter, for the first time, understood the sadness of the dying soldier. Hours passed. The reporter asked the sailor to take the oars so that he could rest. It seemed like only a brief period, but it was more than an hour later when the sailor returned the oars to the reporter. They both knew that only they could keep the boat from sinking, and so they rowed, hour after hour, through the night. When day came, the four men saw land again. But there were no people on the shore. A conference was held on the boat. "Well," said the captain, "if no help is coming, we might better try to reach the shore right away. If we stay out here much longer, we will be too weak to do anything for ourselves at all." The others agreed. They began to turn the boat toward the beach. The captain told them to be careful, that when the boat came near the beach, the waves would sink it. Then everyone should jump out of the boat and swim to the shore. As the boat came closer to land, the waves got bigger and more violent. At last, a large wave climbed into the air and fell on the small boat with great force. The boat turned over as the men jumped into the sea. The water was like ice. The reporter was tired, but he swam toward the beach. He looked for his friends. He saw Billy the sailor in front of him, swimming strongly and quickly. The cook was near him. Behind, the captain held on to the overturned boat with his one good hand. Soon the reporter could swim no longer. A current was carrying him back out to sea. He thought, "Am I going to drown? Can it be possible?" But the current suddenly changed, and he was able to swim toward the shore. The captain called to him to swim to the boat and hold on. The reporter started to swim toward the boat. Then he saw a man running along the shore. He was quickly taking off his shoes and clothes. As the reporter got close to the boat, a large wave hit him and threw him into the air over the boat and far from it. When he tried to get up, he found that the water was not over his head, only halfway up his body, but he was so tired that he could not stand up. Each wave threw him down, and the current kept pulling him back to sea. Then he saw the man again jumping into the water. The man pulled the cook to the shore. Then he ran back into the water for the captain. But the captain waved him away and sent him to the reporter. The man seized the reporter's hand and pulled him to the beach. Then the man pointed to the water and cried, "What's that?" In the shallow water, face down, lay Billy the sailor. The reporter did not know all that happened after that. He fell on the sand as if dropped from a housetop. It seems that immediately the beach was filled with men with blankets, clothes, and whiskey. Women brought hot coffee. The people welcomed the men from the sea to the land. But a still and dripping shape was carried slowly up the beach. And the land's welcome for the sailor's body could only be its final resting place. When night came, the white waves moved in the moonlight. The wind brought the sound of the great sea's voice to the men on the shore.
And that's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.